Mic test 1 2 1 2. Feel like I'm playing Wembley this Ooh. Show. Fellas, how the devil are you?
Yeah, I'm good to be here, mate. It's a bloody beautiful day here in downtown Lennox Head, Fraze. This is what we put on for him, don't we?
I said, you can't complain about anything over the last 24, 48 hours. Beautiful days, very hot, but magnificent.
We'll take it without rain, mate, because we've had a hell of a 2 years with rain here, and some people have copped it pretty bad. I see Auckland's copping it at the moment, which is a feel for them. But, yeah, mate, nice to have a bit of sunshine, and you've brought it in. And you actually don't look all red today, mate. You look pretty good.
I'm in full sweat mode for anyone that can't see me. Look, awesome to be here. Been a while since I've done a pod. Definitely the first time I've ever done a pod with this level of equipment, so I appreciate that very. Do you guys want to, like... Well, you can introduce yourselves, or you can introduce each other. That might be like an interesting way of... Because you said that Fraze... Berk, you said Fraze was like one of the first few people you met here, and he gets some stuff done for you, so...
Well, Fraze is a man who can get things done. long career in the police, say, detectives. Did a hell of a lot of good work in that. Bit of a career change. I'd say late 40s, where, you know, thought he'd always been involved in rugby, always coached in local community areas wherever he was policing, and then now has taken that into, I'd say, trying to make it a profession. He's done a hell of a lot of good work within a lot of rugby programs. I think we're down at the Hunter Wildfires, Bond University, and is now going with IRA, heading that up, mate. Yep. And sort of the Dolphins Academy around here as well, which has been great for all the juniors, which is what you were coaching yesterday, Rusty, all those kids, youngsters from probably 12 through to 17. He's done a great job in getting that off the ground, and that's just all off his own bat. So kids in the area can be very thankful, one bloke, and that's him. So making headway now in the coaching stuff, and I learn from him each day anyway, because we do a thing called the Bodie Boys, which is a training group here in Lennox Head. It sort of started with one guy got jacked of training in gyms and said, look at this bloody beautiful surrounds we've got, let's hit the boat channel with a kettlebell at 5:30 Tuesdays and Thursdays, and from there it's grown to 70, 80 blokes in the chat, and you just turn up whenever you do. There's no one leader. Everyone sort of just takes a session, and you know, I've learned a lot from Fraze whenever he's taken one of those sessions, and we've had, what have we had? We've had Buddy Boy Run Clubs and yes. Goggins Challenges, and raised a hell of a lot of money for charity, and that's been something that's, I suppose, been a big part of COVID here in the area, and something that, I don't know, we've all sort of bandied together, and the floods of, I suppose, when you have a bit of tragedy around, binds community together. So, yeah. Long-winded sort of explanation, but there you go. That's sort of, I think I've covered a fair bit of Fraze there.
Barnsley, that's
and I was going to say, and if you'd introduced it that way, you would have said, to cut a long story
short. I probably would have used a phrase like that.
But that's an epic introduction, and we'll touch on the Boaty Boys in a bit. Mate, you got something to live up to.
Well, I do. Intro. I do. I think with Berrick... his story starts in country Queensland, in remote country Queensland, I guess, to an extent.
Yeah, Kingaroy, peanut country.
Kingaroy.
Famous for peanuts, Russ. That's what, and crazy national national ministers.
Well, again, I think the story with Berrick is born and bred in country Queensland. Obviously, was a good sports person as a child. Cricketer, swimmer, just had a love of all sports, and I think it indicates how a good grounding in multi-sports can really impact people, particularly when they're forging into a career, but they've got a wide variety of sports behind them and experiences that gives them good grounding to move into their career. And obviously with Berrick, migrated from playing schoolboy rugby and then went and to the Broncos first year, is that correct?
Yeah, out a couple of years at the Broncos straight out of school. A
couple of years into the Broncos, and like, he's playing for a wonder club in Brisbane at the time, and you know they were nearly at the peak of their powers. Incredible players, and what an amazing experience for a young man to be around. And then made the transition back over to rugby, because you played rugby at school. Is that correct?
Grew up playing rugby league until I was about 12, and then my family had always had a bit of a background in rugby, so I ended up going to Ipswich Grammar, played probably league Friday nights, union on Saturdays, and then once you got into the first 15, you obviously, you know, pursued rugby as sort of the only sport there. But, so, as you said, mate, played a multitude of sports.
Yeah.
And loved them all. I think cricket was probably my main passion and then probably burnt out when I was 16, you know. So
wicket keeper?
Yeah, wicket keeper. Tried to hit him with a bat. yeah, the old Ian Healy type, just slap it. But,
And then obviously from the Broncos, transitioned back over to rugby.
Yeah.
And had a couple of years at Super Rugby, and ended up getting picked for his country. And there's a small story there, and I think I told you this before, Rusty, but for the listeners, is that in 2007, I was overseas with an Australian police rugby team, and the Wallabies were in Cardiff that week getting ready for that actual test match against Wales. And we went to the training session. I think it was – I'm pretty certain it was the captain's run on the
– Well, funny enough, it was the run for all the double Ds, the dirties, the guys who weren't playing in that test match.
Yep.
And because I didn't go to the captain's run. I was on a tour of the castle there in Cardiff. And I just happened to get a phone call from the manager. He goes, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'm on a tour of the castle with a bunch of tourists." And he goes, "Mate, get back to the hotel. Stephen Larkham's gone to hospital. He's done his knee. There's a chance he could be playing tomorrow." And I'm like, "Oh shit, I've made my debut last week against Japan." And I'd had a few nights on the grog that week because pretty much I wasn't playing. So I was having a great time. And then all of a sudden the heart just going 100 miles an hour. Holy shit, I could be playing tomorrow. So that afternoon, guy we were training with yesterday, Scotty Wisemantle,
yep.
He took all of us down to one just outside of Cardiff just Arms outside. Park there.
Yep, yep.
And we did a session and those boys ran fitness. I pretty much just had a kicking session, bit of skills with Wisey, and happened to meet you, Fraze, with the rest of the boys. And I said, "Yeah, I don't know what's going on tomorrow, but I could be playing. I'm not sure. I'll just wait to hear." And then Knuckles, John Connolly, came to my room at 8:30 at night and said, "Bud, you're going to be starting at 10 tomorrow. Biggest game of our pool stages of the World Cup." So
massive.
Yeah, we made 80,000 people, Cardiff Arms Park.
How good was
it? It was unbelievable, mate. You look back on games in your career, I can't find one that tops that for me. Pretty cool to have met you there. There's so many other people in this area alone that I've met who happened to be at the game there that day.
Yep.
Had five of my best mates basically on a Kentucky tour there that day. So, yeah, when all those things come together.
It was unbelievable, I think. And your game that day was unbelievable. Like, your personal game, it was like a purple patch against the Welsh.
Yeah.
And the feeling inside that stadium. We actually had a function at the old Cardiff Arms. They hosted us for lunch, and then we went over and watched the test match. And the atmosphere, like, I can still have the hair on the back of my neck stand up because the two anthems and then just the way that the Wallabies silenced the crowd was unbelievable. And the night in Cardiff after that was one for the ages.
You were the Wallabies, weren't you? Because we got on a plane and got out of there. Yeah. But, yeah, they happened to be the Wallabies that stayed behind. Yeah,
we wore blazers and spoke with an Australian accent and people thought we were the Wallabies. So,
which player did they think you were? Were you like Phil Waugh?
Yeah, that's a
good one
like that.
Mate, I was probably a bit heavier back then. Not like Phil Waugh, but let's just say it was
Andrew Blades.
It was. that's probably a fair comment back then. But anyway, Berrick, obviously, test match rugby for a couple of years, playing for his country, and then played for New South Wales. And you kind of came through that phase of when you started to receive those concussions. And that kind of obviously was a transitioning point in your career as well. And I think from my understanding, obviously Wisey was at the Tars at the time, was that correct? And looked at you maybe getting some help with one of the local people in town here, Pete Roberts, and obviously coming up to Lennox for a period of time, training in the community and just kind of rehabbing yourself. And it's a big pivotal moment for any footballer or any sports person's career when they're confronted with concussion-based injuries. But you're able to overcome that with the work that you did with Pete, and then you actually went over to Japan and finished off your rugby career there as a professional footballer for many years, played with Robbie Deans, won a title over there, which was something that was eluding you for a long time.
Yeah, funnily enough, I'd only ever won I won it, obviously, club rugby at Sydney and that sort of stuff a few times with Sydney. That was good. But, we had a really good run. I think we won 3 years in a row there up in Japan, and that was pretty good because we had a bit of a I was always had success there, but Tony Brown and people like that had been there. Obviously, Robbie coming to the club, was great, and he's kept it going there now. So I think of the 8 years he's been there, I think they've won six titles or something. So it's kind of crusader-like years. He just knows how to turn a squad over at certain times, knows how to bring youth through, gets the big picture stuff really well, and. Look, at the end of the day, like, no coach is perfect. We've all got our little, everyone's got their idiosyncrasies and stuff yep. like that. But you know, I really appreciated my time with Robbie up there, and was really good for me. I actually reckon I played my best rugby up there. I learnt more about the game up there.
Yep.
And it's interesting when people say that, because people think, oh, you go to Japan for a holiday. Some people do, but I treat it as if it was, you know, it was. I trained more. I did more stuff on the field than I'd ever done, and I just didn't have to do all the crap off the field. I didn't have to do all the marketing, all the bloody visits and different things like that that you get pulled in a million different directions. I just had to play footy, go home to my family, be good with my teammates and everyone hang out. And, mate, I loved it. Living in a small town, didn't have to live in a city to play, all those things. And, so now I found my niche probably in Japan. I loved it. And then obviously come back here to Lennox, played a bit of bush footy. It's good to cop it in the ribs every now and again, mate, on a good couple of late shots. It was great to play with the local blokes here and to see guys who work hard all week, use footy as an outlet, put their body on the line, like they've got employment, all these other things, and they still do it just for the love of the game. Gives you appreciation to have earned a living from it as long as you did.
The other big thing, Beric, for like him playing in the local competition, Rusty, was that it elevated all the other teams. Like, you know, they're playing against Beric Barnes and... there was that anticipation before some games here at Lennox. Like, the crowds were big here.
Yeah, COVID. It was COVID because Lennox has got a town. We've got a town. A lot of surfing's huge here. So guys go and work in the ski fields. They travel the world surfing. Never once, I don't think, has the town ever had its core group, a young group in the town looking for stuff to do because you couldn't go anywhere.
That's right.
So having that footy at that time was a great outlet because there's no kids sport either. So there was something really passionate. We had boom, but it was like a rave party at the Lennox Head Rugby Club. Everyone was a boom box. There was doof going the whole side. The abuse mostly, we had to stop a game, I think, for abuse one day. Most of it was fucking directed at me. If everyone missed a goal kick, it was all my mates just heckling me from the crowd.
Well, just the atmosphere, though, it actually highlighted how good club football is in the area when it's on song like that, and a community environment, people making it, you know, actually putting it in the calendar, I'm going down to the rugby this Saturday at 3 o'clock. And for Lennox, as you said, COVID, just community, and I guess for Beric, to kind of finish off his introduction, is that, you know, he brought his family back from Japan. You're well immersed now with Beck and the kids at the school, and Beck doing work in the community. You do great things with the Boaty Boys yourself. Like during the floods, mate, you're astronomic. And people won't know this, but other listeners may not know this, but like Beric's house was close to going under during the floods. The shed went under there for a little while, and it was unbelievable. It was quite dire that people, a WhatsApp group chat lit up and saying Beric's house was going under, and there was probably 30 or 40 blokes.
Well, I was out on a boat out trying to get other people out on a certain out of here. We were pulling people out of a house way up the river here.
Yep.
And I could get phone reception on like Beck Center, and mate, that was amazing. I had 17 or 18 blokes turn up at my house, moving all my stuff and furniture upstairs. So, mate, I'll never forget that stuff from the boys. It's pretty special.
Oh, it was great. And it's testimony to Beric being in the community because, he does so much great stuff to have it replicated or reciprocated like it was. It just makes, and I said to you this earlier today, Rusty, it's hard to think that you want to leave this place when you get the vibrations that we get off our community around here. It's hard to go away. So,
okay, there's like millions of threads for me. So I'm just going to like say some stuff. So shout out to Nathan Gray as well, because he probably had some similar phone calls from his wife last night. 70 people at a party, probably felt like the floods. I know you talk about the local club, but actually you were saying like Dan Lancaster came over.
Yep.
So Stewie Lancaster's been doing a bit of analysis for you, which is super cool as well, isn't it? Definitely also made me think about, oh my God, we could do so much on this pod. So like transition, like the concussion stuff, moving from a player to potentially being a coach, your transition out of the police, which you spoke about yesterday, which like I'm still thinking about. The fact that you turned up yesterday with a pen and a pad, like... probably wrote more notes than anyone else, and yet you could be the perceived expert in the room as the person that played the most. Phrase the stuff you're doing around coach learning, and again, my experience of being in Australia is probably don't have the numbers on the ground that we do in England, and so it is beholden to individuals to kind of create communities around rugby and connect coaches up, which I think you did brilliantly yesterday. We could talk about detail, which you spoke about on the boards today, and what detail means, and good day, bad day, and all that stuff. But I am going to ask you a question I asked to, and this is also inspired by when we went in the sea the other day.
Yes.
Some Irish bloke like goes,
Jerry.
Jerry from Limerick.
Yeah.
He was there the night. It's the coldest night of my entire life. We lost him. We were with like Australia A. We lost to
Munster.
Mate, guys had hypothermia. It was a 50th minute mark. I didn't give a shit what the result was. I was going, can I survive the next 30 minutes and get off the pitch to warm up? Anyway, Jerry's a bloody legend. I love Jerry.
We saw Jerry yesterday. Yeah, go on.
So chatting to him and said, oh, mate, how can we end up here? And he said, oh, I moved up here because of the Boaty boys. And so we could do a pod about your career. And obviously it almost sounds like phrase, like looked at your Wikipedia page and remembered everything from it. But obviously I know you know each other well. But I was like, oh, wow, like, and he just said, yeah, like, the community, the connection amongst people is super important. And it's definitely something I've noticed as I go about town with you, Fraser, and same again, Berwick, when you're around people. So I'm going to ask the same question I asked to a guy in the bowling club, which is quite weird as well. it's so weird, isn't it?
What would you call it for you? Like, for people in England, it would just be like a pub, wouldn't it? What would it be?
I guess sporting it's like club. A pub, but with bowls. And a 69-year-old man singing, and playing guitar, which was pretty epic. So it was a good night, and social gambling. So the question I asked him, I'm going to ask you the same question, and like maybe have a think about it, and you can choose your answers first. Is three words to describe the Boaty boys?
Oh,
I'd say one word for me would be selfless. There's a guys, yeah, man, yeah, it's there's no one leader either.
It's its own.
It's organic.
Yeah. Yep.
And people would say to me, can you replicate this elsewhere? I initially I thought you could.
Yep.
But I don't know if you can.
I said to you yesterday, it reminded me of, I read a really good quote the other day, and it was, rock and roll wasn't a government initiative. Like that organic nature of, so already I'm thinking, like, how could this exist in Bristol, but of course it wouldn't be the same, and it wouldn't happen the same way. And but so your first word is selfless. You've got two more words.
Mm.
Well, I'd say selfless. Organic is one because it is. It's yep. What else would you say, mate?
Oh,
you got three words each. You got six words between.
Let me think to come up with that. But
I'll take connection.
Mm.
Because you've got 70 to 80 people from all walks of life. We got young boys down there, you know, 12 and 13-year-olds. Yep. And then
probably the oldest would be what, late 50s, 60s?
Late 50s, 60s. And then you just got that cross-section of people. And all we do is exercise. And at the end of it, you give each other a hug and a high five. And you have a swim in the ocean. And, yeah, you get on with your day. And it's a magic tablet that just makes you feel good. And provide you with this connection. Like you said, we walk down the street today, you literally say hello to 50 people.
I invited someone to be a Boaty boy. Yeah. He patted his stomach and went, not for me yet. I was like, mate, I think you'll be all right.
Yeah. It's interesting like that, isn't it? That connection element.
Yep.
I would actually say
love, and that's a strong word, but for a group of men, we've broken those boundaries down where you actually do. You do have a genuine care for each other, and during the floods, again, I was external to it, and my dealings in the cops. I didn't want to go around I didn't want to be around actual floods. I just didn't want to. I'd been there in 2017, and it was enough. But just watching the chat group unfold and watching people put themselves in harm's way, like genuine harm. And there's one member. I'll give him his initials, TJ. Like. He saw and experienced some things during those floods, and he's voiced those to us as a group, and that was brave, really brave. And it brought a tear to your eye and a lump in your throat, but we were there for him, and he's been there for us. And so there's this thread of deep love. That I guess you probably couldn't say. You could say in a football team, I love my football team. Yeah. I reckon there's a real love.
But there's a difference. Like where I find the difference, and I was trying to articulate it to you last night, but you can be open and honest on a group chat about your feelings and not have someone use sarcasm or something to put you down, or you not have to use sarcasm to say a nice thing about you, Rusty. Like, geez, Rusty, man, the last few weeks you've been putting in, brother. I've seen you get up. I've seen you do this. And fucking tip of my hat to you, mate. Like, and say it without having to go, oh, but you're still something else, you know what I mean, to try and – like, I can genuinely, honestly say it and I don't feel weird. And that's kind of – that shouldn't be the way it is. But as a male, that's what I've been brought up to do. You've got to put someone down. You've got to make yourself feel a little bit – I don't know. And I think we're getting past that here a little bit. And that's what's been a special sort of thing for me to see too.
Unbelievable. Again, it's just – it's hard to describe it. You give us three words and we're struggling to encompass it. The last word I will use, and this is, we went on a camping trip.
you went on again? Like,
we do a camping trip each year.
So just like if any wives or girlfriends are listening, just like, because I was imagining how my wife would react to this. Because the other one, and again, we might talk about it, but someone, the guy we met last night said, and then one day I brought down the asbestos suits.
Oh, Keith, who's Ruby?
Yes.
And we trained in, like, the asbestos.
That was hilarious.
And I was thinking, if I came back to my wife, smile on my face, oh, how's your morning been? Yeah, really cool. All the lads put on asbestos suits. We did 400s and 800s. It's pre-season. We had a hug afterwards. She'd go, like, mate, I think you need a magic pill that isn't the one you're currently taking.
Look, again, that there's just so many magic moments, but the camping trip, when we all went away, there was a buzzword that was going to be used before we went away, and that was to be non-judgmental. No judgment.
No judgment.
There's no judgment. And I don't have to go into the camping trip, but non-judgmental is kind of what you're alluding to, Beric, is that I really, if you tell me your deepest secrets and fears or what you're going through, I'm just here, or I'm ears and eyes for you just to listen to your story. We might give some advice or some guidance, but we're really non-judgmental. And I think it's a safe space for people to just be themselves. And that's rare again. That's really rare.
Yeah, I was surprised when you said that. It made me think of Sarah, since I always have a story for something. So someone was telling me about, they have a WhatsApp group and it is no banter. And someone joined and they put in banter. Yeah. And this was the person that told me the story, said, I joined, put in a bit of banter. And no one replied. Ever.
That would have felt, so that would have really... Because,
yeah. Of course, like, yeah, I was just surprised when you said that. You went, oh, this is like almost like the first time it's able to be like that. And I guess sometimes rugby environments aren't necessarily like that. And even when you said that about the pill, like, again, I thought, I wonder how many surgeries around the world are prescribing pills for something that's like, you're probably putting a Band-Aid on something that actually... this would be a good solution, which is immediately why I thought of it. And of course, this stuff exists, you know, in different ways. It exists in rugby clubs. It exists.
Is this in gyms? There's gyms around the place so you see that have these sorts of.
So CrossFit is this pill as well.
Yep.
Do you want to talk about like the rhythm of the week or the rhythm of the year, not just the camping trip? And the
camping trip is freaking good
for the Boaty Boys and how it works.
The Goggins Challenge this year was another one which was pretty amazing. So
unbelievable.
We had a So people who don't know the David Goggins, obviously, you know, that American, in the American military.
Navy SEAL
turned his life, obviously, into a motivational thing. Ultra marathons, incredibly motivational. If you haven't checked him out, he's on Joe Rogan, Jocko Willink, all those podcasts, check him out. But he does a challenge each year, which is you run 7 kilometres every 4 hours for 48 hours. Now, it doesn't sound... It ends up being 82 clicks. Phrase, you did 100. He decided he'd do 100 in it. The sleep deprivation and that in it makes it hard. Mm. And the hardest thing too was a lot of... we just come off the flood stuff too again.
Correct.
So most of us hadn't slept for 2 days. And then we went, you know what, stuff it. We've said we're going to do it. We're going to do it. And we did it around the town here. And what was amazing is we thought we'd have maybe 7 or 8 runners. I think we had about 17 blokes finish the whole thing. And our town at one stage, I reckon we'd had 200 people running with us. All the groups, you just turn up at whichever hour we'd take off, join in. Some people did 1, some people did 10.
Yep.
And then some people finished it obviously with a 12. But the depths people went to on that thing was another community thing which brought sort of everyone together too, which was cool.
Unbelievable. I think one of those experiences was I ran with Rowan Perry. And Tanya, his partner, and Dill Steele. And Rowan, I reckon for the last 3 runs, like he was hobbling. Like, absolutely hobbling.
Yeah, it was almost like, what was that, Terry Fox? Yeah. He was running on one leg. Like, it was just, he'd sort of just hop because his knee cartilage just shot.
Yep.
So, yeah, guys found a way, didn't they, when they didn't.
And,
didn't,
yeah. And yeah, just guys went to the depths. And then it showed, that's what community does. When you've got depths and you're at your lowest and you've got a group of people around you to keep lifting you and bring you up, that was the magic. Yeah, it was pretty.
So that was a cool. That was another cool one.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and people will know if they follow me on Twitter. Like, I think in the UK we're dividing. We're not creating community. I think it actually came to life during COVID, and now we've actually like lost a lot of that stuff. What I think the Boaty Boys is, it's like a collection of men and younger people. So I love the fact that like kids are starting to come into it as well.
Yep.
You get up early, like really early, and there's a different rhythm to life here anyway because it's the surf and people get up early and have coffee. You get up at 5:30, a few times a week, and sometimes you bring a kettlebell and you do some stuff on the beach and you vary who organises it. You're doing a bit of running and you're doing a pre-season at the moment that involves 400s and 800s.
That's the run club. That's a separate version.
And phrases at the back. And I imagine Berwick is like trying to win because he's really competitive. I noticed that yesterday, even with a bad calf. Still trying to beat kids at touch football.
It was great.
And I guess then there's some of the, you know, like you might go for a dip together. You've been doing a bit of Wim Hof. You're probably exploring stretching, yoga, breathing, whatever comes along, and then think that people feel like they're connected to something and they've got people that can listen to them and help them. And, you know, as the floods is probably a real good example of like where people like step in and help each other. My sense is we've lost quite a lot of that in the UK, but and I guess it's the stuff that probably helps you grow older, more healthy.
Maybe that's the challenge. You said, Barnsley, that it probably couldn't be replicated somewhere else in the world. It could be true, but what's not for someone listener, you know, someone in Bristol or someone in another part of the UK or Europe I think the catch cry for the Boaty Boys is the hardest part's turning up. So I think if you just create the event and with the good intentions, then I encourage people to bring connection together, bring community back together again.
Yeah, nice. I mean, and of course, like, the thing over there helps.
Yeah. It does.
So I think the sea and the beach helps.
And the sun. Yeah, it's warm most of the time. It's not freezing cold. Mm. Yeah, so I get your challenges. We've got a beautiful, obviously, environment to do it. But it's interesting too, the days when it's rainy, cold and wet is the days you don't want to miss, because that's usually when the gold happens, you know what I mean? Because you want to be that guy that turns up in the wet. And it's funny, it's become sort of a badge of honour that you turn up when it's squally and it's the worst you can. Yeah, it's interesting. In a funny way, a bit of crisis when I suppose with the floods, this is obviously a pretty affluent area when you think of it. But it didn't matter. Once you lose phone reception, food goes off the shelves. Okay, so you can't get groceries, food, fuel's starting to run out. Mate, it doesn't matter if you've got bloody millions of dollars or you got nothing. Everyone's brought back to a sense of, I don't know, togetherness, where you've all got to chip in. It doesn't matter who you are. And I thought that was a special moment. And I think something like that, as bad as it is, it kind of can do some really good things as well.
Reminds us of like what's the important stuff. I was interested actually in like what happens when someone like joins the Boaties, because I've been inviting people in the street and they might turn up. And then also like, does anyone ever leave? Does anyone ever go like,
yeah,
God, lads, can't find time, or I told my wife about the asbestos suits and she's asked me to leave.
Some guys come in and out, eh? And yeah. I have too, at certain stages. You know, you're away or you're just gone, I'm in a bit of a hole at the moment.
Yep.
Some guys come, sometimes go. But I find sometimes too, guys will now notice if someone who's a big part of it will go for a week and they're like, let's go and check in on him. What's going on here? Like, you're all good, mate, and yeah, you get to the bottom of it. But yeah, you can't. Some guys don't like, some guys struggle with the crowd element of it. Sometimes when you get a few too many people, they've sort of, nah, this is a bit much. But I don't know.
No, look.
Yeah.
Again, that's a non-judgmental situation where if someone's not there, then people will check in. I've been away for just over two and a half weeks and you miss it like crazy. And it's funny, the messages you receive from people, like, just to make sure I was alive. But Yeah, and you do, you miss it. But there is times as well, like, mate, 5:30 in the morning, like, it's pretty comfortable in bed. There's better places you could think about being than going down to the beach in the middle of winter. But, yeah, you don't want to miss that session.
Yeah, you don't want to be at 6:30 and seeing the messages on your phone. That's what kills you. And mate, to be honest, when you talk about transitions earlier, for me, leaving rugby was a massive hole, especially probably the last year of knowing that it was done. I'd had 3 or 4 surgeries and just shit wasn't going right. And I suppose coming back here and getting involved in this has changed it for me, where it's like a rugby club, but not how, you know, you don't, you know, get it done early in the morning and then I've got the whole rest of the day then to do what I've needed to. But I've had a heap of connection. I've exercised. I've got sunlight. I've had a coffee.
Yep.
And I'm a better father and a better husband, I think, for that. I still go in the doghouse most days, but I try me. But I think I'm better for it just from because I get up and do it earlier.
It changes everything, Barnsley. And I mean, you know, being vulnerable here is that, like, yeah, like I had when I got out of the cops and I was really lost there for quite some time. Like I couldn't handle being around people, and that's hard because I've always been that person that wanted to be around people. And then meeting the Bodie boys has really changed my life in many regards. My wife will say it's the best thing that's ever happened to us. So, yeah, that's pretty powerful. But, if you...
Even when you're wearing an asbestos suit, she's still willing to make you a good wife.
The asbestos suits, shout out to Ruv. That was a special session.
Mate, we've had survivor challenges. What else has been down there? I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. Golf balls there that day on the beach, so you had us doing that.
Yep. Just all... Oh, when I run a session, I just try and make it fun because I'm big on play. I just want guys to actually laugh and exercise and move at the same time. And a lot of the stuff I kind of work around is movement, but guys playing with each other. Like old school games, like leapfrogging, egg and spoon races. Like just the fun stuff that people forget about. And you see these grown men like actually laughing about doing an egg and spoon race. Like it's
mate, again, my wife is going, you did what? You did an egg and spoon race on the beach with people who are really old and fat like you. Okay.
And we'll move into coaching later on, but that's the gold. Like when you've unearthed that creativity and the fun and the happiness, you could evolve. You that could be a priming session for me at Bond. And like, yeah. Some of the coaches look at me and go, what's he doing? And it's like, but I've just got these guys now totally engrossed in being here and being happy, and now we can get into the good stuff.
Nice, nice. Well, let's move into coaching. A phrase obviously organised. You got Rugby Palooza, and yesterday had a day of coaches from all over the place coming together. What was your experience of it?
Well, it was good for me. I only came halfway through it, obviously, but, I don't know. I suppose I don't get to do as much of that coaching sort of coach the coaches days. It's not common, I wouldn't say, over here. Like you've initiated it here. Wisey, I've been lucky to have had a lot of experience with Scotty Wiseman, both as a coach and as a friend. And I've seen the way he does it both in community rugby and at a national level. And funnily enough, it doesn't change all that much. So how he coaches at a, you know, when he turns up yesterday in his fishing gear and bare feet, that's how he coaches. Like he doesn't, one thing again, there's always an element of decision making, play, and competitiveness within his sessions, and I freaking loved it as a player. And that was just, coming in yesterday. Well, I had a scrum coach, Andrew Blade, so I'm trying to learn off of that. I'm going, I might have to coach my son's 10-year-old team this year, and Chervo, the guy who usually does the scrums, may not be there. I might have to coach that. So I've spent my whole entire career going, just push you bastards, get me the ball. And now I need to know how to go to the prop. Mate, you got to work on these subtle cues. And
studs in the ground.
Yeah, studs in the ground, pop the pimple on your back. All those little things I'm trying to work out. Then obviously Grazy. And look, and mate, I'll give you – I loved – you know, your session yesterday, throwing all different sorts of stuff out and thinking about it. And you challenged me in so many areas, and it's stuff that I'm going to use. Funnily enough, I saw you that morning for coffee. I went back and used that with my son in the cricket nets. I was going just about try the right way.
Old way, new way.
Then old way, new way. Then I went back to the old way again and went, oh, geez, that doesn't feel real good, does it? I think I might keep with the new way, Dad.
Wow.
Oh, shit, that was powerful. Thanks, Rusty.
Yeah, 10%.
Yeah, oh well, the ski coach you might have given, but hey, we all steal from somewhere.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because again, like someone spoke yesterday and said, "Oh, we often don't have enough money for coach development," and then like 2 minutes later said, "Oh, and we bought a spa for the team." And yeah. again, it's like interesting, isn't it, to what extent? And you've obviously been around a lot of coaches, and I know you speak fondly of Wisey. And I agree with what you said, sir. You know, I did a session for some grown-ups the other week, and I ran the exact same session for, not the exact, same practices with the under-11s. I just changed it, like, different constraints. I would do it slightly different. I might swear a little bit more. I might emphasize physicality, and my skill restarts might be all around that stuff. But the game's the game, really. Like, it's an invasion game. I think sometimes we're, like, making it a bit complicated.
Mm. What? Tell me this, Rusty. What? I know I just off the side, but what took you into your coach mentoring situation? Like, what's taken you into this pathway?
John Fletcher, because Dean Ryan was going to sack me within a week. And Fletch said, why don't you get him to do coach development? And that is the honest truth. And then you probably... I thought Shaw Byrne did a great job yesterday. He had some really provocative slides.
Yep.
His first one was, why'd you coach? Which I think is a question we all need to ask
why
ourselves.
Why do you coach?
I'm going to answer that. But again, I'll often ask coaches, like, what do you measure yourself on? And I said to you, like, I measure myself on hugs in 5 years' time. It gives me energy to see young people. So Kaya yesterday, chatting to him afterwards, doing magic tricks in the in the bowling club, trying to pretend he had his apple juice was a beer. and that's the stuff that kind of gives me energy. With it, probably, and if I'm honest, I probably get more energy from the youngsters than I do from the oldsters as well. But again, yeah, that was probably the start point. And then eventually you go, actually, this is giving me a bit of a buzz. I don't think at any point I ever went, certainly ended up coaching because someone got sacked. And then you go, someone says to you, oh, Rusty, you're doing a meeting in 30 minutes. And I was thinking, how'd you do a meeting? And then you look at it and you go, Jesus Christ, I've been a professional player for like however many years and I don't know how to run a meeting. How ridiculous is this? Mm-hmm. So I think it's tough at the start. One of the interesting stats from New Zealand rugby, and obviously just over in New Zealand before, was the net promoter score for coaches in their first 2 years is minus 10. It is tough. Like, probably had all the same struggles that you're going to have, Berwick, and that, you know, that you've had as well. And then beyond plus 2 years, it's plus 12. Like, then when you start to get okay at it and good at it, and you think, okay, then of course you have the problem of, you then think, oh, I'm getting really close to the top of the mountain. And then you find out some other stuff and you go, oh my God, this mountain is so tall. That was just a false summit.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, probably that. I just get a buzz from it. Like, as you'll say, like, I get energy from helping people.
Yep.
And we've chatted a bit about it between us, like, also, like, that importance of, like, so today's, like, I think I planned my trip well. I had 3 days at the start, chill out.
Rhythm.
Rhythm is super important for coaches. Like, when are your peak moments? How are you going to perform then? How do you do recovery? What gives you energy? What takes it away? All important questions to ask yourself. And then I had 2 days on my own, did a lot of walking in the mound, chilled out a bit. Went to Sydney, did some walking in Sydney, and then I've had a day here where I've just been able to just, like, kick back, relax a little bit. So I'm also, like, getting better at understanding, like, my rhythms and what works for me. Yeah. I think this is a great place to find that stuff out, because it has all the stuff that like, nature and walks and nice coffee shops that help me with that.
It's interesting, like you said, I put a post up on the Bodie Boys not long ago, and it's something that's resonated with me a lot. Is there's two things in life: that there's drains or there's fountains. And so, do you want to be around people that drain you, or do you want people that are fountains? And I think part of that coaching piece is actually, I think when you can avoid the drains, or you know when a drain's coming on, it's how you get that fountain and replenish yourself. So yeah, it's interesting. That's part of the journey.
Yeah, and I was saying to the coaches yesterday, lots of them will have got loads of great new ideas and have loads of energy and invigorated and connected with other coaches. And you might touch base with them and go and spend time with them. But lots of you will be going back into environments where you're going to work with a dickhead. And, like, it's going to be pretty tough for you, and you've got to navigate that. And I'm super fortunate that I work for myself. And so I don't have to work with Dean Ryan anymore. And so it's like, it doesn't sap my energy anymore, does it? I'm able to be myself. It was interesting because, again, Berwick, it's one of the first kind of questions I asked you, was like, which coaches got the best out of you? Why? Which ones didn't? And so I guess the other thing that you experience as an ex-player, as you learn to coach, is like, oh, right, I didn't know that. Or, oh, okay, that's why the coaches were doing that. And again, I ask you the question I ask all the ex-players, would you have been a better player back then if you knew back then what you know now as a coach? And
well, the funny thing was that my last year at Panasonic, or last sort of year or two, I basically was the backs coach whilst playing. So Robbie was great enough to, I'd play the game, do the review on the Sunday, and then I'd lead the team meeting, basically, backs review and everything, have awards and things, and do it all as well as playing. So I had a lot of skin in the game that year, you know, and I had to obviously be aware of my own performance, because if it was shit, I had to freaking reflect on it pretty damn hard in front of the group, because I couldn't be throwing stones if I wasn't sort of living
player
up to
coach,
it.
Coach, such a hard thing to know.
Such a hard thing. No, and it was, but I think it was great that Robbie gave me a drip-feeding sort of version of it. You know, it wasn't sort of thrown like into it as a head coach or anything. And I got to sit in on all those coach meetings too, which I'd been not privy on as a player.
Again, I asked you that question. How many did you sit in? And again, that would have been beneficial for you and coaches.
Huge, mate. And you saw the tension and the and it's because obviously in Japan you've got a whole lot of language barriers. We had a entire Japanese coaching staff with a obviously Robbie's a head coach, so our interpretations of what things mean and different things is difficult. But yeah, there was, you know, often you'd have a lot of tension, like you could be, you know, having shouting matches sometimes or whatever. But the great thing about that was, is once you all cleared the air, if you can move out of that and convey the message to the playing group that you're all relative on the one page and people aren't having your little secret coffee meetings and all this other bullshit, bitching behind backs and that, I hate that stuff. When that sets in, you're pretty much organisation's fucked. So,
and did you, is that something you encountered as a
plenty
player?
I think I've been blessed that I've played in some of the worst teams in history and some, and I think some of the best. And I've been a key catalyst in probably both of those scenarios.
Yeah, again, we chatted about this on the boards this morning, but I was like what's Barry Barnes like on a bad day? And you start telling me about it, and I was like as a group, you never chat about that stuff. So good day, bad day. And that would have been so helpful. Again, I get quite provocative around the word detail. That would be detail to me.
Yeah.
How can we help Berwick when he's having a bad day? Yeah. What does he bring to us on a good day? Like, that stuff's quite important.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think you when you look at the really good organisations, you know, you obviously Crusaders, I think they've got various ways in which they do that. I think you speak so highly of Saris, it sounds as though they've got a way of doing it. And they have this ongoing success that continues. I think Melbourne Storm have got versions of this without it when people talk about what they do too. Yep. So, but then how do you get to that? And that's where every club talks about culture and detail and all these sorts of things. I think, you know, and then you got, you know, continuity of players. Like if you've played together for a long time, you know each other's ins and outs. That definitely helps too. So, I found in teams where you had a really good culture, you never spoke about it. Didn't have to. It kind of just was in the grain and the things and the habits, and the senior players led training. They were the last, first on the field, the last off it. All your shit organisations, the senior players were whinging. They often had injuries and you kind of just felt that they weren't, you know, so.
And someone's reinventing the culture every 6 months.
Exactly, because they're sacking a CEO or sacking a coach or something. So you're constantly, it just keeps going like that. So, yeah, those are kind of the things you see when you're in poor environments and then you see good ones. There's often, even in the best environments I've been in, there's been tension.
Yep.
But people deal with it directly. They confront it. It's kind of that saying too, the standards you walk past are the standards you accept. So if you're willing to, and it's not being a crazy person on stuff, you know, but if it's a thing that deals with your football team and it's going to have a consequence come Saturday or Sunday, then you got to find a way to
address it
early, yeah, I think, before it festers.
Yeah, someone said the other day, quite, you know, if you walk past it twice, it'll become normal.
Yeah,
good point.
Well said.
Barnsley, what about with?
By the way, just one Barnsley story that he told me this morning that I loved, talking about the translator, and you said that because Robbie Deans would crack jokes, the translator wouldn't be able to translate it, so he'd just translate to the audience. Just laugh,
and the boys go, ah!
I don't laugh.
Phil Mooney was a really sarcastic guy too. Yeah. He was up there at the time as well. He'd tell some jokes, and we'd, as far as we'd be laughing, but we'd be going, that's fucking not going to go anywhere near these boys. And the translator was good enough. He just goes, you're an idiot, Phil. And then he'd translate it. Yeah, and basically just laugh. But, you know, it's such a fascinating environment, Japan, because, you know, in terms of meetings and things, because you've got to really be clear on what you're talking about, and you got to damn well make sure your translator knows what you mean, because if he doesn't know it, good luck translating it to another 30 blokes and getting the same message across. So,
Yeah, and we chat again about it, and sorry to interrupt you, no, Fraser, but we chat again about that. Like, if we were to split a squad up into five and go, right on a piece of A4, what's the most important calls or the most important stuff in this team? Like, often there's not that much clarity. My experience of Saracens is that there is clarity, that it's done well through messaging and stories, but also there's an element of challenge. So the coaches would argue and then go forward with what they've agreed with. The players would, and I've sat in a meeting where someone's proposed a game plan and the players overruled it. An analyst put up a video and a player's gone, no, they don't play like that against us. Like, that wouldn't be that normal in my experience.
Nah, not common. And that's there's a comfortability there within the... I don't know if that's a word, is it? But even for the players to be able to step up and say that in front of a coach and have the... Then for them to have the thing to go, no, I respect that. Yeah, fair enough. I'll go away and do something about it. That's rare.
Yeah, we were talking about it this morning, so I won't mention him. Initials WC. I was in a meeting and he said, oh, you all understand this, you know, what this means. Can't remember what it was like. Oars or something like that. And the players went, yeah. And I said, hang on a sec, like, stand up if you know what it means. And one person stood up out of the whole room and I said, oh, okay, like, anyone else? So I said, oh, what does it stand for? And he went, I think the O stand, and I was like, yeah, I think you better sit down. Like, again, but people were willing to allow a coach to share something and then just nod their heads and move on. So again, we chatted a bit with Nath Gray about it, about like deliberately making mistakes. If they don't challenge you or point it out, then I think you're dead at that point. If the players aren't willing to go, hang on a second. You're and again, wrong. I know loads of clubs where that's the case, and you've been listening to me talk about one of them a lot, Fraser. So many apologies about that.
I think that the experiences you've brought, Rusty, and I'll throw to my question to Sick Barnsley, but the experiences of having multiple coaches in a room and just sharing stories, like, it's nice to, as coaches, to be affirmed, but you could tell a story, Rusty, and that will resonate with a coach who's coaching the Walker second 15, you know, and they turn up there yesterday and they go, oh, you know what, it just reaffirms what I thought or what I believed. Or you've challenged them and they'll go back and just that ability to hear messages or hear stories, it's so powerful.
What's challenged you the most over the last kind of 48 hours, either from me or from others? It's always a good question when there needs to be a pause, by the way. We've had that discussion over the last couple of days as well.
Look, for me, sadly, logistics. I'm at the forefront of kind of getting the logistics of the whole weekend together. So listening to things. I actually really enjoyed Berner's presentation yesterday.
So good.
Because it made me reflect on how I use video, the impact of my video, and probably, like, am I wasting my time sometimes?
And which side of the stage you're standing on?
Yeah, right. Well, see, I missed his, so if you were to give me 2 points from it that I could take away from Berner's presentation.
Mate, check him out. He's writing this down later on his
Unbelievable. It was really engaging from me, but it was more about... he just talked about the use of video. And for the community coaches, coaching, you know, under sevens, like, everyone's got a camera in their pocket. And the best kind of feedback a player gets is actually looking at themselves, and then you start to slow things down. He did the halfback pass. I've just shown a halfback pass. Like, you can film that and then, you know, break down the frames to show the player just where things may be going right or may be going wrong. But the ability to give that feedback... Like, if community coaches walk away from yesterday and a couple of the under 7 coaches or under 12 coaches do some video filming of themselves as coaches as well, I think that's a huge
win. I don't think he's going to sell loads of huddle to people in the room, but like, it's really simple, isn't it? It's a good example again in France recently, and I was just with the coaches, who are the top 3 players off the ball, scanning and sharing information, and who are the worst 2. And just create some videos. We can then use that with the players. We can then share that with the coaches. Like, so I think it's some quite easy stuff. I loved how provocative around he was. Second question he asked was, put your hand up if you shouted at kids. A couple of people put their hand up, and his next slide was, am I being clear enough? Put your hand up if you shouted at kids or not.
Yeah, like, I'd put mine up clearly. Yeah,
I think it was quite cool to go, like, we've all got stuff wrong. Like,
yeah,
we don't all get this right all the time. And of course, also because you read left to right, if you stand on the left hand side of the stage, it's a better place to stand. So that was a good little nudge from him as well.
Yeah, I like that. Left hand side of the stage. Put
that in the notebook, mate.
Yes.
What was the stuff for you from the weekend? So if you were to go, I'll give you three things, like three things from the weekend that you go, okay, that's something I can go and like apply.
No, I think the big thing was having the vulnerability to be able to film yourself and see yourself and what actually messages you are giving off to people.
Yep.
Because I think that would be powerful. I know Bill Walsh, who coached the San Francisco 49ers for years, filmed every one of his team meetings and filmed himself and what he was delivering. And I thought that was powerful, but it takes a fair bit of – because I remember when we first started this podcast, when you hear your voice back for the first time – and you hear okay or all the little saddles that
does that make sense?
You go, well, whatever you say. Yeah, that's why it might be your one.
Long story short.
Long story short.
If I'm going to be
honest.
It's horrific, isn't it? When you first hear it, it's confronting. And I think for me, I'm going to have to take that leap now and do that for myself because it's like, what am I giving off? And take that initial bit of hurt.
That's interesting. Top tip, probably put the so I work with a coach in a premiership club and he GoPro'd a training session and the players all started, he put it on him and the players all started freaking out. Who's going to see this? Where's this going? That's not a good environment, by the way.
Yeah,
they're near the bottom of the league. Then I would just put it on the players because they actually get a cool piece of stuff. Might be a player you think you're going to interact with a lot. So if I put one on Kaya yesterday, I'd probably also see how much I don't interact with the other kids. And so put it on the player. They get a good piece of footage, but you also get like your interactions. You probably see a little bit around where you're standing or where you're not standing. It's probably an easier way to start to introduce it.
It's funny, I when I go up to Tokyo Uni in Japan, they basically just follow me around with a camera during the sessions. And this was the first time I'd ever really actually had myself filmed coaching. And I was like, far out. I think I'm speaking Japanese. I'm really just speaking English with an accent. And my hands and movements and shit are going everywhere. And I was just like, I've got to slow this down. And be clearer. And that was good. So I think for me, taking away from that, just, you know, you've just got to be more aware of my own sort of stuff within that. At the end of the day, it resonates with me when you want to be a coach that you wanted to play for or play sort of with. And I loved games. I love competitive. You get me in of the training.
I hadn't noticed. You had a bad calf. And you attempted to get a drop goal to beat the kids.
I had to win. But no, I just had to have a shot. I didn't care if I get it. I just like a friggin' had to be in the game because I love that. That gets my juices flowing. That's a big thing you miss when you leave footy and that sort of stuff is just you need something every now and again to be competitive.
So we've done one thing so far. We've done the video. You've got two more things you've taken from the conference.
Video, conference. The other thing too is you don't often manipulate the rules for two different teams. You've always got the same rules for the same game.
Matt O'Connor's face when I said that was like he'd seen fire. And you, again, like how often?
I didn't see fire. I just thought, shit, that's good. Okay, because often I'd subtly do that anyway when I've got kids because I'm wanting to level games up.
Yeah.
But you probably don't do it in a way where you just make poor refereeing decisions so that team can get an opportunity. So you find ways to level it up anyway, but
so
I didn't do it intentionally.
Like one team having slightly different rules. So, for example, the lads had – And actually, I've been thinking about it. But if they touched you, your score was zero. And I didn't know if you noticed. You were on two, and then you went down to zero because the kids touched you. So, and then there was the cone. How good were the kids?
Yeah.
So we had a red cone that only the kids knew was worth 2 points to start with if you scored on it. Then eventually the grown-ups worked it out. Then the kids hid the cone under another cone. Rusty.
That was very clever from there. Cone.
Yeah. So Harry's like hiding the cone under another cone. And I'm like, mate, this is so good.
That was really good. I think the other thing too is often when you're a spot coach, so someone who comes into an environment, you get pretty much turn up on the day and you're thrown into a thing and you've got to start and you're bringing your own drills and your own skills to an environment. And without that priming, you spend so much time trying to initially explain it. And especially as guys, we're such visual and kinesthetic learners that it takes you a good couple of minutes to learn, to feel it, to get an understanding of what actual drill is. And you've killed that limited amount of time the S&C's given you to do whatever the hell you're there for. So for me, trying to get that ability to prime it or to have set things you've done a bit on repetition and then you just add layers to it will help, I think, for me.
Levels will help you. So, and also to give it context, so the day before, I was debating whether or not to share the game with the kids, so we did a rondo. But I did share it with them because I thought it's going to be helpful for them. But then they got to pick the adults to play again, so they picked you because you're famous. Then they picked loads of out-of-shape fellas. They were like, that guy looks like he can't run. That guy looks like I could sidestep him, which got them excited. And then I said to them, you can explain the rules to the adults, but you don't have to tell them all the rules, and you could bend them slightly. So again, like that, it takes a bit of like your cognitive stuff to learn a game and get used to it, by which time the kids had defeated you three test matches to zero, quite frankly.
Outrageous refereeing, I thought.
Yeah, but that's super great. Important, isn't it? And great. Again, names for games, levels, solves the problem of, right, we're going to start something new. We're gonna, you know, I just wouldn't.
Yeah, names for games, huge, mate. That was a big thing I learned. There's a book, Train Poop. I'll remember it anyway, but that naming thing, so guys have a clear thing of, bang, we're going to this, boom, you know it's coming. There's that clear crisp, and then you just, levels, layering it, make it competitive. Anything to start training where you've got a game and something that's just competitive, it could be freaking egg and spoon race, mate. But if it's competitive, I am all in. And you've got me.
Australia now, people are buying eggs.
You've got me. You've got me in.
They've sold out of spoons on Amazon Marketplace.
Again, just as you said, getting those creative juices flowing. One big thing you said over the weekend, Russ, was competition drives behaviour.
Oh, mate. And I can see the behaviour of some adults this weekend.
We said that.
Which is then impacted on their kids' behaviour.
Yep.
That is driven by the competition. And also, I guess your competition also is not just, it's a bit like the North in England. It's not just like rugby, it's like NRL teams are like, you know, so we also see this competition between us and NRL or AFL. I don't see that as competition. I see that as like, if we do that well, then actually, oh yeah, go and try some NRL, and we'd love to have you back. And us having good relationships. Look, if any of your kids drop out of NRL, we'd love to have them come over to us and play rugby. So I think often people are seeing stuff as competition. You know, what is winning? How do we score stuff? You know, if you had a competition where it was the first team to get like 6 of their 10 players to score a try, then you'd share the ball more. If there was 5 bonus points for the team whose parents are the best behaved, then the parents wouldn't behave like dickheads.
Wow. Yeah, so that's like, such
what
a good
you
point.
Score, how you know, what you think winning is important. And again, it's, you know, Rugby Australia is no different to being in New Zealand, no different to being in the UK. Like, we are challenged post COVID, we are challenged with contact and concussion, we are challenged with other sports, we are challenged by phones. Like people spoke really well about it this weekend, just the energy around the game, like, where's the energy of the coaches? Where's the energy around the community? Where's the energy around Rugby Australia and New Zealand rugby that's like making people want to be part of this, you know, this tribe, this gang? I think those things are quite important, aren't they?
Massive. Well, the golden decade, like we talked about. So they're advertising the golden decade, you know, the next 10 years within the code.
Golden decade.
Well, we talked today about clarity and purpose this morning, about clubs that have got clarity and purpose. Well, we've got some purpose. Now let's put some clarity around it, and then, you know, maybe controversially, coaching might appear on the front.
Yeah, but it's not controversial, so I don't think you were there for that bit, Beric. But and I sat in an RFU meeting again with next to Kevin Bowring, legend of a man, and like the RFU, you know, grow the game. Here's our pillars. Where's coaching? Like, and same again yesterday. I just had a flashback. Sitting next to Kevin Bowring and seeing his face when coaching isn't there, like, it has huge impact. And they had stuff like, you know, new pitches, you know, tidy out clubhouses. I'm thinking, yeah, coaching may be helpful.
Hugely. I think when you look at our halcyon days, when you go back to those really important things, you look at it, we were a professional far quicker than pretty much every other nation because of rugby league and to an extent good AFL, point. But mostly rugby league. So our coaches had far more exposure to those professional environments just by virtue of being running around them, players playing both codes. And you look at that period too, a lot of our coaches have all gone around the world, or you haven't been able to replace that same group that we had sort of come through together. So I think, and then you look at New Zealand, conversely, they probably invested more within their model. I think Ireland maybe, I'm not sure how, you see it more closely than I do, Rusty, but from an outsider looking in, it seems you look at all their past players who are back coaching, real quality players who are sort of back in the things. Yep. You've got sort of, there seems like a some of a plan growing their coaches. Now, you can talk about money and how they do it. I'm not sure. It probably plays a part, but question whether we have the ability or have got a plan about doing it here, would you say? So I don't know.
It's big. I mean, the my job with IRA, like we're big on utilising ex-players of the game who are relevant, have recent information to pass back to you know, the kids that come to our camp or the coaches that come to our camp. And yeah, that's an engaging process because we want to keep that IP in the room and get it back to the kids. And then the challenge is actually getting these guys to maybe coach formally. But look, it's part of the jigsaw, isn't it? We're just trying to keep thinking of ways that we can keep furthering the knowledge of the up and coming, but utilising the people, the ex-players such as yourselves who have been there, done that.
Yeah. How do you make it an environment that you want to coach in too? Because let's face it, when you look at the sacrifices you got to make to be a coach, the travel, the time away from your family, the pressure, the constant week-to-week thing that you may not have a job here, it's not all that rosy. People
and
like to think...
The promoter score is very low at the start.
Yeah, so you're getting constant objection, rejection early when you kind of need that little bit of
incentives. Coached his son and he said, I stopped coaching because of the parents. And clearly it's my bias and I always give a shout out to Oki on this, but I think we're way ahead of the curve on how this stuff gets done. There's a menu of learning. It gives people more options. It's more bespoke. It's definitely more individualised. Of course, people always want more, but I think we're well ahead of other sports. You know, you choose. I'm an economist, so there's an opportunity cost. You choose where you put your money. You buy the spa
you're so right, Mark. I go around at so many of these teams now, and their facilities are unbelievable. Yet the skills on the players, it's like it's gone back to the amateur days. Like, so, no, I'm not kidding you. It's embarrassing. And you kind of look at it and you go, far out, like, why are we investing in some crazy recovery center and you can only run this amount of Ks and you can only do this and monitor this and GPS that? It's like games won in between the goalposts on the side, you know. So how do we get back to that? And that the people who have influence on that is the people you're talking about. Coaches.
Yeah, true story. Well, we're never going to solve it.
No.
My passion project, so the Palooza situation, has kind of grown because I want clubs to take custody of looking after their coaches, because Berwick might coach for 1 year and it's been a dreadful season. But imagine if the coach, they might pay for you to go and do a course at the end of the year, or just acknowledge that it's been hard. Like, how can we help? And if we can help coaches or help clubs realise actually the way you're going to keep coaches in the game is by educating them and maybe looking after them. Mate, you're not going to have the shortage of coaches that it does exist at the moment. And so, yeah, I get to use this platform here. And Rusty, you know, your platform's the same. Like, who's looking after coaches? And that's the challenge. And I'm big at the administration about, well, let's start looking at informal training other than formal training. Let's offer courses. Let's offer opportunities for them to go and do things. And, you know, coaches will come back the following year because they've been schooled up or they feel like they've been supported.
It's a good point. When you think about the tragedy with Paul Green in rugby league too. So with the suicide and then the stress and that sort of stuff too. We don't often look at the mental toll and putting some framework around coaches in that perspective either. It's all player-based.
Well, and you weren't there, so Andrew Blades talked about what the Waratahs are doing this year, and they actually brought in this mental wellness for their players.
For
the players. And then one of the coaches in the audience said, what are you doing for the coaches? And Blades, he was stumped.
Great question, though.
And there you go. Paul Green, a couple of months ago, NRL coach. And, you know, you read about other coaches. It takes a huge toll on them. Where's that level of support? And, you know, Rusty, I think that's the beauty, that you get to float in and float out and offer that level of support. You know, you've done it for us over the last couple of months since we've engaged. It's just, I know, you just feel like, oh, here's my problem, and you might throw another problem towards me, but it just makes you feel supported to do your task.
That's why I'm writing lists of names when I'm speaking to you, is to check in with people. And again, like, just to give it a framework, like, so I speak about cards for players, cards for coaches as
100%.
Well. So creativity, solutions to problems. We need to help coaches have, you know, more awareness of self, of strengths, of good day, of bad day, of how, you know, what are the strengths of my coaching team? Resilience, actually. How do I deal with pressure? What's the stuff that helps me? How can I create where you spoke about Robbie Dean's been great for you because he'd go, mate, just go and take a week away. Go and spend the time with your family. Mm-hmm. And you said, as a result, I would play hard for that guy.
Yeah. Like,
that is a performance conversation. Go and have a week off is a performance conversation. But again, we have this kind of...
Yeah, and then how do you, I suppose, how do you then relate that to the group and get the group comfortable that, hey, he's just gone away from the group to spend time with his family, but is that okay?
Yeah, but you've got it, so it's interesting. So Joe Alabon, speaking about Joe a bit at Oynacht, and he jumped on with Annalise, who's at Tyler Grange the other day, and speaking about leadership and his experiences of it, and he said, like, we spoke a bit about signposting, and he said, well, we have got players that we treat differently and staff. I need to tell people about that, like, so that they don't go away and have coffees and talk about it, and I explained the rationale behind it, like, one of our players is away this week because of this. Like, we think it's really important for them.
Phil Jackson with the Bulls.
Yeah, Robin. Dennis Robin. That's a great story. Las Vegas.
But then, Barnsley, you relate what happened with Robbie, you know, and that relationship with you. You've got a relationship with your coach that you can have open dialogue. Coach recognises it. Coach, you know, indicates the player probably needs a spell or whatever it may be just to get the best out of them for that performance. And I think one of the beauties of coach-player relationships, and this is the question I was going to ask earlier, is that you've been with some amazing coaches, like at Brisbane with Wayne.
Yeah.
Maybe give some insights for Rusty about, well, like Wayne Bennett, obviously a legend within rugby league. What about his man management style?
Well, as a 17-year-old kid coming into that environment, it was hugely intimidating, and I probably was so nervous that it affected me that badly at training that I'd make a lot of errors, and Wayne was not easy to deal with when you were making errors. Like, he'd ball you out in front of the group. Mate, there were days I'd go home and probably cry a little bit, you know what I mean, and go, how am I going to get through this, to be honest, because it was tough. And the league boys, like, you're coming in there to take food off their table, essentially. So until you become part of the playing group and you earn your respect, you're getting none. And that, and
I'm intrigued by that.
It's interesting.
That wouldn't happen in the best environments, I know. But I guess you're probably winning.
But we were. And it was a real... There was a bit of an arrogance there around the Bronx at the time. There was a rock star status, especially in the town. There's some of the greats of the game. But a couple of players there were really instrumental. Gordon Tallis was huge for me. I didn't have my license. I was still riding my bike to training. So he chucked my car in this new HSV sponsor car, drive a couple of suburbs past his and drop me home.
Oh,
just so I didn't have to ride some days. And he'd come up and have a beer with my dad occasionally. And that was huge for me. Invite me to golf or something with the group when he didn't have to, with a cool dude. Like, that, those little things sort of kept it. He understood that little bit. He was the captain at the club. So that was huge.
Peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
High value.
It was massive. Mm-hmm. And but what I learned from that year is, all right, you've got to start going and finding the answers for yourself and stop whinging and complaining and go and work it out. And I said to myself, all right, Shane Webke's the benchmark of who I've got to tackle. If I can tackle him, I can tackle anyone else in the NRL. I'm going to tackle. So I went up to him, shit scared of even asking him a question. Shane, can I do tackling with you after training every day? And he goes, all right then. And because Shane is 100%, 100 miles an hour, everything he does. Mate, he put me on my ass 4 times, you know what I mean? I'd get back up, keep doing it, or I've got to learn to do this. Eventually, I nutted it, and I could see the respect slowly. You felt it. You started getting game time in first grade. You started being around, holy shit, your treatment becomes better.
Yep.
And your perception of how you're getting treated becomes better. So would I say the experience was... roses and everything? No, it was character building in a shitload of ways. I appreciated the way Wayne you could have wins and losses, and then all of a sudden there'd be, you know, like you've just had a great win, and then there'd be a poem in your locker. What's this? And that could be a poem about guys getting a bit too big for their boots, that cup one. I'm trying to remember what it was. Or, you know, the man in the mirror one would come out occasionally. Yep. Or, you know, especially when and just little things or him. I'll never forget it. Always make the line. So with fitness, run past the line. It doesn't matter. Like, it might just be 1 meter. It's not going to have any direct effect on your fitness. But that ability to be able to push yourself and not quit that step before it matters big at the end of games. The other one was know who you listen to. So too often we're influenced by our parents and people that we think have got our best interests at heart, but they know jack shit about the game and they know jack shit about the environment that you're in. So you've got to surround yourself with obviously some people within that environment who are giving you honest feedback so you know what where you stand, but also some people who are probably outside of that may not be as closely sort of biased to how you're actually going. So knowing who you listen to, make the line, those sort of little things were huge. And funny thing was, I went to the Reds the next year. Jeez, the boys were good. Great blokes. Coaching staff were welcoming. It's fucking awesome. This is the greatest place ever. Everyone's so friendly. And then, but then fitness happens. Yep. And oh, hamstrings a bit tight. Ah, geez, why are we doing this today? Why are we doing this? Like, what can we do on something else? Like, this is bullshit, you know? Mm. Fuck, oh, did you see what he did here? Or, you know, like, shit, there's my captain. He's taking a shortcut over there. What? So I saw the differences. The Broncos was ruthless, but no one shortcuts. Yeah. And that was all sort of that's the thing. And then I come to the Reds. Everyone was great blokes, great environment to be in, but people took shortcuts and wow. We didn't win. So I don't know. That's my two experiences from real early in my career. Take with it what you want.
one question that comes out of that, Rusty, for me is, what's your observations of parents coaching players, coaching their children? And I don't know, what kind of suggestions have you got for that scenario?
Oh, look, you're coaching your son at a good age. You played for Australia. They probably think you're quite a good coach. You'll be a good coach, of course you will.
No, but you are right. I've got a certain sense of leeway there
really
with
hard.
That. Yeah.
So again, like we saw it yesterday, like a couple of people went and like coached their own kids when the opportunity to coach others. I'm like, my experience was like, sometimes you end up stepping up. You go, oh, this could be done better, and you try to influence the coaches. You try to distract them at times when they're like behaving poorly. And then eventually you go, oh, do you need a bit of a hand, fellas? And then it becomes hard. At, like teenagers was hard for me and my son, and then eventually he then goes, oh, Dad, could you, you know? And then he's like interested because he knows that Dad knows a little bit of what he's speaking about. It is tough, like 100%. It's tough, like. Mm. And I have people who deal with it differently. I don't coach my son's age group. That would exist a lot. I know there's clubs where you're not allowed to coach your own kid's age group.
Yep.
I actually think that's quite an interesting concept to play around with. Some become like obsessed with their kids and like, this kid's going to play in the NRL, or they're going to play in the Premiership, or they're going to... And it's like, yeah, just calm down a little bit. Like, everyone just take a chill pill. I think there's always a challenge around like the game we played versus the game they're going to play. So yesterday, you know, there was a comment around like, you know, apart from nines and tens, there's a small number of passes. Maybe we don't need to teach people to pass. And I was thinking, but that's not the game that's going to exist in the future.
Mm. Great point.
Like you said, we spoke about like, and I was fascinated. I said like, in the future, like in my head, people are going to excel in the game. And it depends how good people want to be. They're going to be able to pass up both hands and kick off both feet. And you went, actually, in some of the environments I go into, it's less common. It used to be really cool when Johnny did it, and now less people are doing it. And if I brought a tennis ball out and tried to get them to kick with their non-dominant, and I said, well, the flip side of that is there's a Premier League football team, and they start all their sessions with 10 minutes of wooden foot club. And the game, you're only allowed to play with your non-dominant foot. Signposts to people, like, that's super important. So if you start every single kicking session with non-dominant kicks at goal, I mean, A, it would look terrible to start with, but they might go away and practice it.
Yeah, you probably would, because I'd want to win. Yeah, you know, so I go away and do it. It reminds me of that Kobe Bryant, three-pointers. Said, what was it? Got to the Lakers, one of these guys, and they said, Kobe just could not beat us in a three-point comp. And he said every day I'd watch him for like hours after training, just go away. It took him 3 months to beat us.
Yep.
And then he never lost ever again. So, but it takes me like just, you touched on a point there and you asked me what I learned out of those things. That video gaming thing is if you can design the ultimate player or what you think the future is going to be, it's a great way to look at how you develop skills in that and go, what do I want to see? What's it look like? And then how do I create my sessions around creating those habits and designing that? Because I think that's where you got to look, not just in here, where are we going?
Yeah, well, even one of the lads, and I can't remember his name now, cause I've had to learn a lot of names in the last few weeks, and he was like, stood on the edge. I knew what he was going to say. He was quite young, so what position did you say? He said, play prop. I said, oh, cool, who's the most skillful prop in the world? And he said, Toops. So now his nickname is Toops. Toops. And like he's in
big
the middle.
Sammy's
in the middle. He's ball playing, and it was interesting. We had a lad back in the pathway called John, and everyone used to call him Big John. And Fletch said, "I'm changing his name. It's going to be Skillful John." Yeah. So Big John's carrying and running out of people, and Skillful John's like passing and kicking and seeing opportunities, and like again, we something you know, and you'll have seen it over the weekend. Often, you know, when you're coaching. It's quite easy to put competition drives behavior. If your competition is to win stuff, then of course the solution is put people in positions, tell them what to do, tell them what they can't do, shout instruction from the sideline, probably pick the most physically mature kids, have a really organized structure that people can't go away from. But there's a longer term cost to that, in my opinion. I think like we miss out on some stuff. And I guess the other stuff I see with some of the kids here, so Kai is a great example, is, so when we try to give him a rugby ball, of course he's got six balls at home. So the amount of informal play they're doing is super important. Ollie Runswick, shout out, he did a piece of work with England with the women's cricket in the pathway, and he said that he looked at their amount of informal play and it was the lowest of any sport he's ever seen.
Yeah.
So there's implications for coaches there. So if we've got loads of kids that are doing loads of informal play, then we might be able to go, actually, we are going to do a bit more shapey framework, structure, whatever you want to call it, to help them. But if we've got kids that haven't had the opportunity to stand, pass, kick, do all that stuff, then we probably need to bring some of that in.
On the Friday, we did a front load in-store with the kids. Wisey showed some one-handed stuff and... Rusty talked about the game and we brought in some of the challenges of like kick it with your right foot, kick it with your left foot. And then during the game yesterday, like the kids got the neural pathways were open. Like the kids doing one-handed passes, flick passes, Harry with the left foot kick.
Yeah, did both feet.
Well, like, and again, that's the magic. And then you see the kids' faces light up and they're so happy.
They don't get to, but you touched on that one with Danny Kerr, wasn't it? When you brought him to training
I said
the other
DC,
day.
Yeah, you won't mind me saying this. We did a day at ACS Cobham, and it was a while ago, and I think he was struggling with his rugby, and we just played games with the kids. I always say just, I don't mean just. We played games with the kids, and I was like, turn to DC, and he's like, honestly, he's having the time of his life. Yep. I said, mate, is this the most fun you've had like this week? He went, this is the most fun I've had in ages, Rusty. And like sometimes we forget that. Like the stuff we did yesterday, I'm very serious about people getting better. Like... I'm not like, but I understand like good practice design, well-designed games that are competitive, enjoyable, like have a high level of challenge, that individualize stuff. So people had individual stuff that they then would like be working on and I could help them with. Like, I'm very serious about people getting better. One of my favorite quotes is a session at Portsmouth, and I think I spoke to you about it. And I thought I was coaching the kids. So I had like levels, superpowers, all this stuff. Then the guy comes in and goes, the fellas are ready outside. I went, oh, fellas? He went, yeah, you got the first team. I was like, oh, right, okay. I thought the kids.
They had the Portsmouth footy side.
Give me five minutes. I said to the coaches, right, I'm going all in on this. I'm getting the headbands out. We're doing the full whack. Anyway, we do it with the grown-ups, and they're like bashing each other and trying to get through the levels and picking superpowers. And at the end, someone said... one of the coaches there, she said, oh, what's your feedback on for Rusty on the session? And one, and I love this feedback. One of the guys, it must have been like 38, he said, it's probably the most fun I've had in ages, but I felt like we were very serious about getting better. And I'm really serious about people getting better.
Yeah.
Like, I'm super serious about it.
But how much energy do you get when you get that back from a player? Oh, fuck, it gives you light your fire. Like, man, I get someone who I feel like's got that same energy for me, that want to get better. I'll do hours. I don't care what it takes.
That's the magic.
That's the goal. That's the magic. But it's, yeah, it's rare to find. I don't know. Maybe we're just, yeah, find a way to.
Last question. We could chat here for hours.
We could be here.
I have no idea what time it is. Yeah. One thing that's going to make Rugby Palooza better in 2024, apart from Rusty coming back and bringing his son, it's a nudge.
Limited tickets.
Yeah, we chatted about that. Again, there's always a tension, isn't there? You want to influence lots of people, but the more people are, the less individual interactions there are.
And more time on the grass, coaches coaching each other.
Yeah, everyone took all my time away. So
I know, you got robbed.
Yeah, I got robbed. I think that would be super important.
I think next year...
Maybe we start with that next year.
I think maybe you get on the field and then go into the aircon a little bit later, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. It's something to think about, because if it depends what you want to be.
That would be my preference.
Yeah.
To have some activity and experience together.
Beautiful.
To then decode it and go, oh, remember when we did that?
Yeah.
That was that.
Yeah.
Remember when we did that? That was... That's what Bladesy's talking about there. You know, that's what Matt's talking about when he says that, actually. At the professional end, it looks like that. Yeah. What do you, as a participant, albeit only turned up for half a day, what did bring a pen and paper there? What's the foot amount of benefit? Obviously, getting the drop goal.
I really love when you actually get the coaches to interact in games. I think I see so much now where coaches don't have any of the skills that they're actually trying to coach.
Yeah.
So. How can you model it? Modeling is so important. So you've then got to get the best player in the group to model that behavior so then guys can follow. Like, too often I see coach where, you know, like, you've got to be reasonably fit too. We're too often just stand there with a clipboard. You can't move. Like, if they don't – players look to that as your description of what it means to be an elite. I don't know. I just think there's some form of thing with that where getting them involved yesterday, getting them playing, you see the smiles on their faces. I'd encourage that sort of interaction within the players a little bit more.
Yeah, and the flip of that with Sport England, I did the bag coach thing, and I did debate that, but I didn't do it because of time. But to give them that experience of being coached badly as well, to feel what that is like, is also helpful for the parents.
Yeah.
Or for the older ones.
Could you put like a mole out there maybe as a bad parent within a group? Would you potentially do that and shout abuse and everyone go, look at this idiot, like, and then pull everyone in and go, did everyone see that? Now you see that form of thing?
Yeah, you could
or
do
what?
Secret mission, you know, the phrase was the ninja.
Yeah, I saw that. I actually thought you'd put that one of the kids' dads as that, like a secret coach thing, but he was just being himself.
He was just being a dad.
I was about to say, yeah.
You want a secret mission to be a bad parent? So I did that with Sport England, and I had to do the bad coach stuff.
Yep.
But I also picked someone whose job it was, she was one of the participants, but she was to be a participant who, like, reinforced my stuff, because that does happen. So a coach will have a go at a kid, or other kids will then start to jump on that kid, because that's like even worse, isn't it? When that happens.
Oh.
And when you talk about the fatness and the clipboard, just to give you like an excuse, I said to you, I did a pre-season before I came out here. Like, I trained really hard because I know how it's like quite tiring coaching, isn't it? Like, it's tiring in the brain, it's tiring in the body. That ability to move, to think about where you stand, to maybe model some stuff, like to be at your best all the time, like. You're probably going to be quite fit to do that.
Well, maybe you don't. I don't know. Maybe that's just what I feel like. I see as something I bring to the table, so hence I can't expect everyone else to be like that. But I don't know. I look at it and go, no, well, is that something you could do? I just learned by seeing and doing. So modeling really worked for me.
Show me. Tell me.
Yeah, all right, I'm hearing all this shit, man. Let's just get out in the field. Show me what you mean. Yeah. All right, let's go.
Maybe use Burner's... good example of a video. And then you can, that's another tool for coaches.
It's a huge tool, mate. I think of Scott Robertson, right? And I don't know, people aware of this probably are, but he's dyslexic. Okay, so he uses video better than probably most other coaches, and he uses it as a motivational tool and obviously things to tie things together and create that, you know, great culture that they've got. But it's something to think about, because you're dealing with boys, and were most of us great at school? School is a big fear for a lot of kids. Again, what are the two biggest fears of male and female boys? It's being made to feel dumb, So if you get told you ever like don't add up to being that, and you get told that in school a lot. And then for girls, it's body image. So that's what I've told on a podcast. I'll regurgitate that. But you think about that, putting kids in a classroom, you put them back into those sort of environments where you probably got fear and shit that they don't really want to be. I don't know. I've learned a lot from Wisey in that sense. Get them on the field. Do your learning out there. What's wrong with taking a clipboard? Like you took a big board out there on the field. Can you do your team meeting on the field?
I needed the whiteboard to dump my brain. Last question, who's the best player you played with? Who's the best player you played against?
With George Smith.
Oh, yes.
He'd be pretty close to being against too. best leader ever. You just Richie McCaw for his just... But he may not have been the best player. George Smith might have been a better player maybe, but McCaw leadership-wise, Carter's just... And I saw... what he did then at racing and then up at Kobe in Japan just confirmed to me that just how good he was. And Matt Giddo's also had similar success where he's sort of gone too. But, yeah, those sort of names seem to ring true.
The building's on fire. You can only save one coach. Which coach are you saving?
Wisey, because he'd fucking do it for me. Wisey. And probably just, look, I had my ups and downs with Robbie Deans, but I look back on my time with him and I had probably over 10 years with him. So there's just that relationship and that, I suppose, bond with him. So, yeah, nice. Probably be those two.
If people are interested in Rugby Palooza or reaching out, where would they go?
They can check us on the socials at Instagram and just direct message us. And I think using your insights today, like we'll set up a Google Drive and we're just going to dump everything in there. So if coaches want access to resources, I'll give you everything you want. But like us on the socials. Stay tuned for 12 months' time.
All right. Nice. We do on our podcast, mate, we do a thing called the ball bag. Okay. The ball bag.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. Okay. So,
the podcast that you haven't invited us on.
Yeah. I wanted to do it. You invaded our podcast space to do your own. And I was like, all right. Well, basically, we just do. So I'll add a little bit to this. Three bands, dead or alive, you can invite to your next team sort of day that you're going to light the boys up with. Three bands.
Queen playing Wembley.
Shit, yeah. Boom. That'd be good.
Live Aid, done.
Oh, wow.
Tick.
Freddie. Love it.
That's it. That's it.
What do you listen to? What floats your boat?
I listen to everything. And we were talking about this a lot as well, like long car trips on the way there, phone calls on the way back.
Singing.
Music, singing.
Concerts
like,
on the way home.
Terrible singer. The guy last night was blowing my mind. Chili Peppers.
Yeah, Kiedis. Good.
Me and my wife went to see them in concert. That was pretty cool. They really got a great photo of it. And I'm like, got my top off and I'm in reasonable nick. I'm not now. I look like you when you're surfing. and then the last one is, what are they called? Thousand Trees. Kelly, Stereophonics.
Oh, yeah.
So I saw Stereophonics.
Yeah, I haven't had Stereophonics on
live
on
at one of Victor Bogu's dinner, like literally 10 yards away from me. And it was ridiculous because they just got lots of good songs, haven't they? But even again, like the guy last night, they were playing Beatles songs. And I love a bit of Beatles, if I'm honest. I listen to most stuff, Pink, Katy Perry, like just random
nice.
Stuff.
Yeah, good.
What's yours?
Bands? Oh, I listen to a whole lot of stuff, but I love country music too. So that week in Nashville I had for the Country Music Festival was the greatest week of my life. Other than getting married, baby. I love you. Love you so much. There'd have to be some bit of country in there. I love Paul Kelly too, the Australian. He's kind of like Australian Bob Dylan. He'd be up there. Yeah, I love him. But Bruce Springsteen, he's my one bucket list concert I've never been to that I'd love to see
Bruce
the boss.
Bruce Springsteen reminds me of... I think he sang this song. When we were in San Diego for the Sevens, Tom Biggs has waked us up every day. We're born in the USA.
Yeah.
On like 11 out of 10. Everyone, born in the USA.
Yeah.
Every morning.
Good autobiography.
Yeah. Top three.
My top three. I'm going to go and see Midnight Oil.
Yeah, great. They were at Blues Fest this year. They're unbelievable.
Beds are burning, mate. I'd probably actually go the 10-1 era and just have that live Red Sails in the Sunset. Second band I'm going to see is Metallica. I've seen them a couple of times.
Do you see their concert in Russia when they opened the war? It's the biggest crowd ever at a concert. Check it on YouTube.
Wow.
Russia, you cannot. There's a chopper flying in front of the stage, like, and you cannot see the back of it. Like, I thought Robbie Williams live at Nebworth had to be, like, when he packed it 3 days straight, but go and check it out. No. Metallica, live in Russia. Massive.
You can't beat For Whom the Bell Tolls live in concert. And then the third band I will always go and see, I've got them tattooed over my body, but AC/DC with Bon Scott in the 70s. I just want a small pub. If they're playing at Lennox, I'd be more than happy to cram in there, but old AC/DC, I sing it on the way home.
Thunderstruck's probably one of, probably the number one walkout or warm-up song for teams in the world, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Okay, a podcast, a book, or a movie, or either one of each.
I thought you've taken over this. Faze, you go first. Podcast, book, movie.
Yeah.
Forrest Gump, favourite movie.
Yeah, all time.
Easy.
Great movie.
Podcast, Huberman, think he's a genius.
Yeah, Huberman's great, isn't he?
Book. I'm going to give a shout out to a book I'm reading at the moment because I'm always like in between books. Some I like, some I don't. My favourite book of all is Sapiens, but I'm reading Social Leap.
I've got to read Sapiens. Everyone tells me.
Understand like why we behave like we do and why the Boaty Boys is so freaking important. Go on, what you got, lads?
Mate, book, I'm going to say The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday.
Yeah, strong.
Big game changer in my life. That was massive. Podcast. Look, Condo may listen to this, but Ball and All Magic Academy. Gee whiz, my head's spinning here.
Ball and All Magic Academy.
But
love it.
One of the best podcasts I ever listened to was with Joe Rogan. And he went into, I've just forgotten the bloke's name, but he's a mushroom specialist.
Oh, yeah.
Talks about the power of mushrooms.
Let's be open. Like, how have you changed from your days in the police to where you are now? No, because I'm gonna share a bit myself. Yep. Like,
yep. My last couple of years in the cops, I worked in a drug unit. Like, you know, drugs is a social problem, and I don't think law enforcement does much to prevent much of it. I think it takes it off the street, but you're not going to stop it. Is decriminalisation the answer? I don't know.
Yeah,
but ultimately, I think that, and I know this from leaving the cops and people going having medical trials with PTSD, like through mushroom based treatment or MDMA LSD, ketamine.
Yeah,
is that the some drugs actually have some health benefits to people, and if you look at the history of cannabis, and I won't bore the listeners here, but yeah, the history of cannabis was that. It was basically outlawed in America by the DuPont family because they owned paper and you could make paper through hemp. So if you look at the history, that became decriminal. That's how it became an illegal substance. So, look, I'm open to people using drugs. I'm open to people experimenting with drugs. I went down CrossFit a couple of years ago and I met a really influential CrossFit coach in the States a couple of years ago, and he actually had his athletes use mushrooms to actually expand their consciousness, to make them believe in what was possible or what could be possible. And he had some success using that. So, I don't want young kids trying drugs. That's for certain. But the reality is that some drugs actually have a health benefit for people, and I think it's not far away till we see some drugs decriminalised in Australia and used for medical purposes.
I think the podcast scene has been huge for that.
Yep.
It's just opened up a whole nother world to people of what actually is possible, and we're just fed this rhetoric of alcohol, smokes or whatever the only way, and this is bad and this is bad. Well, yeah, shit, moving to this area, I've opened my eyes up a hell of a lot, and I've changed a lot of preconceptions about what I had, that all this stuff, and yeah, to the point where I fucking don't even really like drinking alcohol anymore.
Nah. Well, you know? Huberman, so back to the Boaty Boys, like there was a podcast put up on the chat. It was about basically the evils of alcohol. Huberman gives a really good insight to it. That goes up on the chat. All of a sudden, I think guys, I was part of a cleanse during January. This guy's going to be off it for February. Like, yeah, I had beers last night and it knocked me about. And it's like,
I thought you had COVID today. You had one beer last night. What's your movie?
My favourite movie, probably the Godfather series or Casino.
I thought you were going to say Green Mile. I've heard a few people mention Green Mile here, but
What about yours?
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump. Yeah. It was my number two.
Great soundtrack.
Yeah.
Boom.
Movies, Shawshank Redemption, Forrest Gump, Good Will Hunting, and the Australian movie for you, The Castle. If you've ever seen The Castle, yeah. All time, Daryl Kerrigan. Yeah, so movies there. I'll give a book, Practice Perfect, when we're just talking for our, you know, for what we're trying to do in this sort of thing.
I think it's yellow, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's on my bookshelf, top right.
I like it. Really got a lot of good cues. 20 things out of it. And podcast, Ball and All, just a specific podcast for kids trying to make it would be the one Matthew Johns does with Craig Johnston, who played for Liverpool. He was the first Australian to go over play for Liverpool. But he's
back in the day, he was in my Panini sticker album.
It's two and a yeah, there you go, mate. It's 2.5 sort of 3 hours, but his story of what he endured when he first went to Liverpool about overcoming obstacles, finding a way, grinding it out, being away from home, next level. It blew my mind. And I encourage kids, if you're ever thinking about having a crack at it, that'd be one I'd listen to.
Beautiful.
Nice. Any more questions?
Last question for you. Yeah, you go, Fraser.
Well, quote. What's a quote that you abide by or reference yourself by, Rusty?
Oh, lads, come on. You've got to give me time to think on this.
Yeah.
Or we can go around. Barnsley?
Under-promise and over-deliver is always a good one. Too many people beating their own drum. But, I don't know. I think something to do, something to love, and something to look forward to. Three things you need in life. You got those three, you're usually pretty happy with where you are. Something to do, something to love, something to look forward to. So that's a pretty good one for me. Try and get the stool
right. I'm sure I've got loads. When we went to Wellington, and we did well in Wellington a few times, and I remember going into a rugby club and they just had a quote on the wall that I really liked, and it was, you're either in or you're out. There's no in between.
And that kind of helps
me think about stuff. And then I saw the other day, and I took a picture of him and put it on Twitter, but I quite liked it. Just tell your friends you love them. Often, I mean, you talk about the Boaty Boys again, but often we wait till people die. Or they get sacked or stuff.
Well said.
Share good stuff with them. Again, the kids were amazing yesterday. Again, sharing good stuff with each other. I spent a bit of time, obviously, in New Zealand. I go, point to someone who's done, point to someone who's, have you told them? No, I haven't told them. Think they want to hear it? Yeah.
Yep.
You might want to tell them.
You got one phrase? I'm going to share one more in a sec, but...
I told the story last night. I did a thing with the Navy SEALs when I transitioned out of the cops.
That was crazy, that story. That's freaking awesome.
It's the quote that's on your right arm.
There you
go. From the poem Invictus.
Invictus. Yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. And that poem, I said to these guys, I recite it daily.
Yeah,
but there was another mantra that came out of that that weekend, and that was ready to lead, ready to follow, never quit.
Yeah,
and I think for a sports team based industry, that's pretty much a mantra that if I can instill into my staff and players, we'll have some success.
I like it.
You got one more question?
No, just one more. There's the
balance. This is the last one.
Yeah. No. This is the longest podcast ever, mate. It's Joe Rogan, mate. You got to love this shit.
Yeah.
You did say that earlier. I think you were trying to convince me because all my pods have gone short, and then you went, Joe Rogan's.
He's changed the game, mate. Don't fucking worry about it.
10-hour podcast.
Yeah. That one of the Ballina Rugby League Club has got a quote on the wall, and it's a fucking great one. And it's like, somewhere in this grandstand today is a kid who wants to be just like you. You owe him your best. Oh. That's fucking powerful. It gives me goosebumps because you forget that as a player.
Wow.
You're in your own bubble, your own injuries, your own life shit, but you owe that kid out there whatever you're doing your best. So I thought that was a priceless one. Last bit for you. If you could give advice, I'm not sure whether to go with this, with young kids trying to make it or parents with young kids. I don't know. Go with it where you want to, but a bit of advice from all your years of coaching that you'd instill into others.
Probably it's not a race. Would be helpful for parents to think about. They often think it's a race. They're rushing towards something that, as we know, it's a late maturation sport. It's going to take luck. Some of the kids that are ahead at an early age, that's a problem for them.
Yeah.
Kai is lucky. He's small. It's going to help him.
Yeah.
Marcus was lucky. He was small. He had to be skillful. And probably for the kids, yeah. I mean, look, I get it's really difficult, but like, just like kind of staying in the moment, enjoying stuff is super important. I think you can do class stuff with rugby. Like, you can go and travel the world. I'm here today because of rugby. I'm New Zealand before because of rugby, because of people I met on Zoom, because people who reached out on Twitter. Like, I think you can do remarkable things with sport. You don't have to be playing in the grand final or the, you know, to do amazing things with sport. I love the fact Dan Lancaster's coming back out here. I love the fact that next year my wife thinks I'm going on a gap year with my son because he's going to come out to New Zealand and he's going to go to France with me. And I'm going to leave him in Oz and he's going to go and spend some time with Pete at Cranbrook School.
Yeah, good. You'll be back at Byron Bay.
Yeah, rugby does all that, you know. So, yeah, I think sometimes we can, like, we think that making it, and I've deliberately put my hand there, is... It was never like that when I was a kid. So you didn't have to go through the academies and then get selected for this and then selected for that and then selected for that. Oh, no, you get released here. Released? What does that mean? Like, it's not prison. Like, we're not releasing people from prison, are we? And some of those kids never come back. Yeah, and they go, oh, my God, I'm not good enough. And they doubt themselves. And, like, they struggle with that stuff. I chat to Ben Gollins this week and told me for 10 years he struggled with one conversation with a coach. 10 years that had impact on him. And so, like, I think we can, yeah, we're getting some stuff. We're definitely getting some stuff wrong there. I've seen that in the UK. I've got some of Fred's mates that have been released on Facebook. Some of them have turned around and me go, at least I can enjoy my rugby now. And that's, like, kind of sad, but you definitely got to enjoy your rugby.
Yeah.
Love it. There you go. That's a small taste of what the Ball and All is about, mate. Let's go deep. Let's get into a few things, you know.
Only that invite me. Look, fellas.
Thank you,
really,
mate.
Appreciate having you two on. It's been cool. I appreciate you looking after me for the last couple of days as well. And fingers crossed I get invited back in.
Well, mate.
2024.
We appreciate you coming over here. And yeah, for the audience, like, what you do for coaches, what you do for the game is next level. It's good. It stimulates conversation, it stimulates thoughts. You want to provoke good reactions in the game. I think your commentary there on how good rugby is, it's actually a freaking amazing game. And, like, it's brought this room so many great experiences. As I ended off saying to the parents there yesterday, we just want the kids that were there yesterday to start their rugby journey on the best possible way. And mate, I thank you for making your way over here to Australia. Always welcome. And to your wife, yep, look, it's only Lennox Head, but you could probably live here for a couple of days and enjoy it. It won't be too boring. Have a gelato, go for a walk up the hill. Be fantastic. Yeah.
Well said, Fraz. Well said.
I think she could do a trip here. Cool. Thanks, lads. I appreciate it.
On you, mate.
Over and out.
Thanks, Russ.
Cheers, Russ.